Hello, Bears fans, and welcome back to another edition of Bears on Tap. I am Ron Luce, joined by Q himself, and we have a very, very special guest with us here today from the Bears blog, Mr. Jonathan Wood. Jonathan, first off, sir, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Excited to be here and talk some about the Bears. Finally, for the first time in a few years, some actual exciting things to talk about, which is nice and looking forward to it. Thank you guys for having me.
We appreciate you coming on. I think we can all agree here it's refreshing having a team with some promise to talk about for the, as you mentioned, for the first time in a few years here. Q, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. Just getting done with a hectic work day and trying to wind down with some Bears talk.
I love that. I love that. Well, Q, as you introduced on our last show, we are doing this series discussing and kind of analyzing the state of the Bears with a slew of guests. And this week, obviously, Mr. Wood, kind enough to join us. So, Jonathan, we'll just dive right into it here. First question.
Can I say one thing, Ron?
Oh, please do. Please do.
Just if you want to go back, if you want to catch the start of the series, make sure to go check out last week. We had Robert Schmitz on, and we'll have someone else next week and the week after.
Yeah, it's a whole big old series. A lot of good stuff coming from Bears on Tap as well. And again, we appreciate all of our guests being a part of this because it's going to be a lot of fun. We're probably going to do some follow-up content with it, analyze different answers from different guests and everything like that. And so, Jonathan, without further ado, how do you see the state of the Chicago Bears?
Yeah, I certainly think 2023 is going to be a lot better than 2022 was. I would say I expect the Bears to be in a place where they are like not a great team yet, but they'll at least be competitive. I think somewhere around 500 is probably a reasonable expectation, where they are kind of no longer a pushover, but actually like a legitimate threat. It's really nice. I think when you look at the roster, a lot of the like glaring holes they've had the last few years have been patched up with, at least you can say like they're adequate now, but they're still lacking that like top end talent that would make them a really, really strong team, a contender like the Eagles or Chiefs or teams like that.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, it's exciting though, right? Like, I mean, like you said, a lot better than last year. And it's like, man, last year was rough. It was hard to watch as a fan, as a content creator. And it's like, it's hard not to get a little excited when you see some talent coming into the building. Now, maybe along the lines of that talent coming into the building, or maybe not. What are you hoping to see the Bears focus on more in 2023 versus what we've seen in previous years?
Yeah, this is a really broad answer, but I'll start with the passing game. They killed it on the ground last year, with Fields certainly, but you know, Khalil Herbert had a really good year as well. So I think they've like shown they can do that well, but they got to throw it more, and they have to throw it more effectively. And I'm especially excited to see Fields hopefully get better at finding that balance of not just pushing it down the field all the time, which is his natural instinct and is good. But sometimes you just got to take the layups and not go for like the three pointers all the time, I guess, for the basketball analogy there. And I'm hopeful that both a better approach from Fields, but also better talent around him this year, lets him just take those layups a bit more, which will just make the offense more consistent and less reliant on getting big chunk plays to score. It's something we've seen recently with comparable quarterbacks who broke out in year three, like Jalen Hurts and Josh Allen. Both took those checkdowns more in year three. If you look like the percentage of deep passes versus short ones, it was very similar to Fields in year two, and then changed that ratio a bit to do more short stuff in year three. And I'm hoping we see the same out of Fields as a way to unlock the passing game as a whole.
Yeah, and Jonathan, I kind of want to follow up because I very much agree with you. And it's one of those things where I think a lot of fans are trying to put 2022 behind them, right? And at least in their memory of like, wow, that was a rough year to watch, as Q had mentioned, as you had mentioned. But do you think the pushing the ball down the field so much last year, do you think that was just a Justin Fields trying to do too much thing? Or do you think it was maybe a little schematic because of the lack of talent, or maybe a mix of both, just from the coach's side saying, hey, look, we know Justin can throw the ball deep. His arm is a weapon. We don't have the elite talent of guys that are going to get open in the, you know, the short and the midterm downfield. You know, it is kind of, it really did feel at times last year, the passing game, it was run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, and then you hoped you got that 40-plus yard play. Otherwise, the passing game was completely stagnant. So do you think it was a result of just a young quarterback, or do you think it was maybe more of a combination of, because of the lack of talent, they had to schematically design the team that way?
That's a really great question. And honestly, I don't know the answer because I'm not in, you know, the preparation rooms, the meeting rooms, coming up with the game plans. But my gut would probably say a good bit of both, that they kind of realized they needed those big plays to score. They weren't going to be able to do the consistent like 10, 15 play drives with small chunks consistently. And also it's just a weapon that you have. And like, it's not that he needs to stop throwing deep, just needs to learn to pick his spots a little bit better.
Well, and cause we're all numbers guys here. So we can throw around some numbers of like, you know, that's success rate, right? That's what success rate is, saying you can string together 10 play drives and get all the way down the field, cause you're hitting a 50-55% success rate. And you're just, if you miss one, you're going to hit the next. I don't really think the Bears had that last year, which, I mean, like you said, none of us really know how much it might have been the coaches saying, this is how we have to do it. But, I mean, the Bears were near the bottom of the league in success rate last year, especially as a passing offense, that I think you might be onto something a little bit there, Ron, that they had to, you know, say, we're pounding the rock, and then we're taking big shots off of it, and that is our passing offense. Now, one thing that you mentioned, Jonathan, of Josh Allen, I mean, I think he is the prime example of having to learn that short game. And I think when you have an arm the way that Josh Allen does, the way that Fields does, I mean, Hurts has a good arm, but it's not like those two other guys, especially Josh Allen. I mean, he's on another level compared to everyone, but that threat of him being able to just gun the ball so well downfield has to make learning the short game and the reads, and like your reads are probably a lot more clear when defenses are so scared of that. But when you're not doing it, it doesn't matter. Like we saw Josh Allen last year after that elbow injury, he dropped from arguably the number one quarterback in the league by a lot of stats, top two in almost every stat category, to around eighth, ninth, like a top 10 quarterback, which, you know, you'll still take, but it's not the dominant force that he was the first 9 weeks. And it was because he couldn't hit short throws. I saw a stat the other day that was like 1 in 4 of his throws within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage were off target, uncatchable after the injury. And the stats show out, like you look up his deep pass rate, it became near the top of the league, and his short pass rates dropped down and all his efficiency numbers dropped down because of it. Cause defense has said, well, we know you just want to go deep, so we're just not going to let you.
Yeah. And Q, I wonder if that was too, like maybe a combination to your point when it comes to a guy like Allen, where, because of that injury, you know, he could be a little more inaccurate on the deep ball, right? You can allow your playmakers to go get it a little more. That precision accuracy isn't as necessary as it is in that short to medium passing game, where you are hitting, you know, quick windows that will open and shut, you know, at the same rate in terms of speed. So I think that's a fascinating thought to keep in mind, of just like, hey, the deep ball has a chance of success rate in theory, especially once they acquired Chase Claypool, because you had guys that were 50-50-esque ball receivers, where, you know, in Fields' case, it was nobody was getting open in the short and the medium term. But Jonathan,
EQ was really good on those curl routes, though.
The 8 second curl routes. Well, hopefully we can turn the conversation back to something more positive and get the EQ, you know, number one receiver thought out of all of our brains right now. But Jonathan, what is the your favorite thing that the Bears are doing? And this is from a roster standpoint, from a schematic standpoint, really any other aspect of the organization. What is the top thing that you just look at and you go, yes, I love that. I hope they keep doing that. I don't want them to stop, because to you, that is, you know, maybe a key to success, or just whatever the reasoning is of whatever your favorite thing is that they're doing right now.
Yeah, I really like the improved depth on the roster, which is maybe a weird answer, but they have so many guys who went into last year as starters who are now backups, which is probably more where they belong. Like Equanimeous St. Brown, you know, Pettis, Borum, Patrick, Sanborn, Vildor, all of those guys were primary starters last year. And I guess Sanborn, if you consider the Sam backer a starter, but that's really more of like the top backup linebacker.
Well, I mean, even he's got competition now with what's his name?
Sewell, yeah. And I really like that. Like, those guys all kind of fall in the, like, you shouldn't be a starter, but you're a quality backup. And now they're actually where they should be on the roster. And I think that's going to really pay dividends down the stretch of the season as injuries start to pile up. Because now all of a sudden, you know, last year their starters were bad, but then the backups were even worse. And now this year, you know, the starters might be okay, not great, but they have quality backups where the drop-off's not going to be too huge.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised by how much linebacker they brought in, if I'm being honest. Like, it was, you know, you felt pretty good about that position relative to some other ones on the roster coming into the offseason, because you said, well, we got Sanborn and we can figure the other spot out, and we're nickel 70% of the time in the league now, so the Sam backer probably isn't as relevant. But I mean, I was not surprised that they signed one backer. But they went after Edwards and Edmonds and got two starting caliber guys. That really shocked me personally.
Yeah, yeah. Likewise.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think especially when, right, Edwards signed, everybody's like, oh, okay, this is a nice signing. Like, he's kind of under the radar to the quote-unquote general NFL fan. But when you look at the numbers, he's a tackling machine, obviously played on a really, really, really good defense there in Philadelphia. And then it was what? 25, 30 minutes after it felt like that day, all of a sudden, yeah, it's like, boom, Tremaine Edmonds signs too. And everybody's like, whoa, okay. They're really taking some big swings, because I think the Edwards move felt maybe in a little more of the ballpark of what the Bears were, what a lot of people thought they were going to do, in the sense of he's a good piece, but he's not, you're not paying the big dollars for him, right? He's not that elite dollar value that you're paying in free agency. Whereas Edmonds was more along those lines, because you were giving him the big 4-year contract. And now, granted, the structuring of said contract is genius when you actually see it and break it down. And if, you know, if Edmonds starts to fall off late, he's a very low cap hit, and it's a very front loaded contract when they do have all this cap space. But agreed, I think the surprise was certainly there on day one when they did pull the trigger on two starting caliber linebackers and on day one of free agency.
Yeah. And it wasn't even Okereke. I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but that was who we all thought.
Right. 100%.
Were you going to say something?
That was
JW.
Yeah, that was kind of nice this offseason too. Like, when last offseason, a year ago, you know, when they had the new regime in place, it felt like everybody they were targeting was somebody they had a past connection to. And I was worried that was going to be like a continuing trend. But they didn't do that. You know, people were talking about Okereke at linebacker, or like Rock Yassin at cornerback. There was I'm forgetting his name, but the left tackle from Kansas City. Like, there were guys who the new regime had ties to, and they didn't do that this offseason. They just looked for guys who they think are good fits for what they want to build instead, which is another thing that I really like. They're not limiting themselves.
And I do almost wonder how much of that, as you say it, comes from last year. They were trying to, you know, build the culture of what they want and have their guys come in the building and kind of show everybody what that means. But this year, everyone's seen it, you know, that they have set their expectations. They might not feel that need to build it from the ground up in the same way, where they need a few foundational pieces to show it to everybody. But we can move on to the next item here, and it's really different branch, the same tree, but opposite side. What's the least favorite thing that you've seen from the Bears this offseason as far as roster, scheme, front office, stadium, whatever you want it to be?
I feel like they didn't, like they were one big move short on the offensive line. And I'm scared that when injuries start to hit, that's going to come back to bite them. Like the offensive line, like they, I went into the offseason, like studied who they had and was like, they really need to add like three quality starters that are like sure things. And they added two, which has me scared. They didn't add anybody really for depth either. And so like, I would really like to see maybe like a sure thing at center and then cut either Whitehair or Patrick. You know, it's not hard to look at the offensive line and think, oh, that's actually pretty solid. They got these two young tackles you like. They've got, you know, Tevin Jenkins at guard, looked really good when he was healthy last year. Cody Whitehair looked really good before he got hurt last year. Nate Davis is a real solid player. But at the same time, Braxton Jones needs to get better in pass protection. Tevin Jenkins does too, and needs to prove he can stay healthy. Cody Whitehair is on the wrong side of 30 and has had some injury issues piling up. Lucas Patrick was hurt and terrible last year as the backup. And your right tackle's a rookie. Like, there's just a lot of question marks on that line. And I would feel a lot better about it. Like, it could end up being fine, but I'd feel a lot better if they had like one more sure thing.
Yeah, that's completely fair. Cause too, that's definitely something that when you mention it, it really is kind of scary. And I almost think maybe kind of, as you said, Jonathan, like that starting five might be okay. Right. But injuries are Thanos in the game of football. They're inevitable. We know they're inevitable. And agreed. I think that's where more of the scare comes into play, because it's all the same guys that were here as depth last season. And we all saw how that happened, right? Like, I don't think any of these guys are going to take monumental steps forward in one off season to truly get better, right? Whether it's, you know, Cheers Carter, whether it's Larry Borum, etc. Even if they had maybe invested in not the, you know, the Michael Schofields of the world where they bring them in on, you know, day four of training camp, but had they invested in maybe some of these kind of fringe starters for 1 year deals, right? Maybe a couple million bucks to some, you know, 29, 30 year old veteran that if you do sustain one of these serious injuries at, especially to a key guy on the line, right? Whether it's a Davis or, you know, a Jenkins, who, as you mentioned, has already shown that he's injury prone, that could step in and you at least feel somewhat comfortable, right? I don't think any of us are going to sit here and be like, this is the, you know, mid 2010 Cowboys offensive line by any means, but it would have been definitely more reassuring, I think, seeing them invest more in the depth. Like, it was nice seeing them go take the big swing on Davis. It was nice seeing them take Darnell Wright as their first, you know, pick in this year's draft, but just one to two of those guys that you go, that's a nice, like, I think in this year, a guy like a Riley Reiff would have been nice. Maybe not for the money, but that type of player, right? Where like, he's probably a fringe starter. He's competing, but he's really good depth and probably can play two or three spots on the line versus just what they're rolling back out there now.
Man, I'll tell you, anyone who listened to our post week one of free agency show might remember, I was pretty grumpy. I was not a happy camper. I was, and I've come around more since they got Darnell Wright and since I've, you know, looked into Nate Davis some more and feel, you know, a bit more comfortable with it. But I mean, I'm with you on the fact that, like, man, there were guys like Andrew Wiley or Isaiah Wynn that I would have just guys who have guard tackle flexibility and have started a tackle in this league that you could have had at reasonable dollars. That I didn't understand the rationale with not trying to add one of those guys, just has that safety net. But at the same, so now I guess I've turned my attention to, like, when was it that they signed Riley Reiff last year? Was it the first week of training camp? Is that right?
Might have been.
Yeah, so Reiff and Schofield were like right before camp started, or like as players were reporting, kind of thing.
So in my mind, right now they're evaluating the guys that they have, right? And that it was the same last year. They were saying, we'll see if we can get by with these guys. And then after that first week of training camp is when I think we'll know, you know, if they feel pretty good about Tyre Carter or not, or if they feel, you know, like Larry Borum has really, he can be your swing tackle, or if they need to go get a guy. So that's kind of the date that I'm kind of watching for, because there are a few names out there still who are, you know, okay swing guys and okay, like guys who are probably not going to sign until they have to for training camp because they don't want to go through OTAs. But that's kind of what I'm looking out for on the O-line. I'm hoping they add somebody, but at the same time, I'm like, there are times in the past I remember, especially with Jerry Angelo, where it would be like, what are they going to do at this spot? They got nobody. But the front office kind of knew that they had this guy in the wings who'd been looking really good through camp. And, you know, all of a sudden, next thing you know, this fifth rounder that no one's ever heard of is really playing well for the Bears. I'm, you know, it's a pretty optimistic thought. And, you know, I don't want to get lost in the optimism on it, but that's, I'm hoping that that's the end case with some of this, if they need to call on some of that depth, because it's weird that they haven't added more. It's a little perplexing.
Yeah, I think, again, I'm not in the room, but my guess is that they are still fairly confident in Lucas Patrick, who was solid in Green Bay as kind of that, like, okay starter, but a really, really good quality backup, which is where he is right now. He was awful last year, but never really healthy. And so I think they're banking on him being like a high quality backup and providing that depth on the interior.
And one thing I can say to, and I've said this a few times on here, and I hate to sound like the you know, Lucas Patrick truther who's like standing up for the guy, but he was in Green Bay. He played what, between Elgton Jenkins and I forget who their other guard was, but they always had good size, right? And Patrick is an undersized offensive lineman, like an undersized center and a very undersized guard. So sticking him next to a, I don't want to say undersized, but maybe like not quite up to NFL strength levels, left tackle, and a very undersized center, and asking him to do the same thing that he did between, you know, David Bakhtiari and Corey Linsley. Mm-hmm. I think they're very different aspects. Now, I don't think the Bears have a David Bakhtiari and a Corey Linsley on their line right now. But, I mean, I think that Patrick can be a serviceable guy, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and that's definitely one thing I think that goes under-considered sometimes with the offensive line and how guys play is you have to look at the line as a whole, right? I know we talked about this with Robert on last week's show, but they often say, right, if you have three quality linemen, you can hide the other two guys and get away just fine because that group operates so much as a unit. If you have three really good offensive linemen and two average to maybe slightly below average guys, you'll be fine. Like, that is a quality offensive line group. But to your point, Q, right, it's when a rookie fifth-round left tackle and Sam Mustafa are playing on either side of you, who are both well below, you know, what you probably would want in an NFL tackle and NFL center, then you start to see some of those flaws in certain offensive linemen's games be more, I guess, just brought to the light, right? And you're in the case of Patrick, a more undersized player, a guy that, you know, was able to hide, right, because of a Bakhtiari and a Lindsey. And then it becomes very different when you put him in that role. So agreed with you. I think he is nice, as you guys have both said. Like, he is in the right spot. He is a solid guy that fills in. He's a culture guy. He knows the offense that Getsy runs because of their time together in Green Bay. So, like, he's the guy that's there to help, especially a guy like Darnell Wright, who's coming in, and even Davis, right? Who, you know, Jeremy says here in the comments, he says, any word why Davis didn't show up until now at OTAs? I didn't see any, but a guy that's probably a little further behind on maybe getting to know the playbook a little bit, Patrick brings a lot of value there to coach a veteran up and say, hey, look, this is how we did it. This is what we looked for. And then especially with a rookie who is just, you know, getting his toes wet at the NFL level.
I wonder, this is my tinfoil hat moment. You know why he showed up? Huh? Because he heard Tyre Carter was coming for his job. That's why.
Hey, I hope you're right, Q. I hope you're right. Truthfully, that would be incredible. It would be absolutely incredible. But Jonathan, sticking kind of on position groups, I love that we got here a lot faster, I think, than we anticipated. What is the position or positions, if there's two that you're like, ah, they're right there, I can't choose, that you are truly most excited about in 2023?
I'm going to cheat a little bit and say skill positions, which is really three, thinking of like running back, wide receiver, and tight end. But I think of them together because there's five of them on the field and pretty much any snap unless you have an extra offensive lineman or two. And I really like the mix and depth that the Bears have there. You know, last year they basically had like one wide receiver, one tight end, and two running backs who you felt okay playing, like these, yeah, should be on the field. This year there are eight guys that I think are I'd be happy with being on for snaps. They got three running backs with Khalil Herbert back, signed Donta Foreman, and drafted Roschon Johnson. They got three wide receivers now with adding DJ Moore and hopefully Chase Claypool getting up to speed a bit to go alongside Darnell Mooney. And two tight ends now that they added Robert Tonyan to back up Cole Kmet. And I'm particularly intrigued with Tonyan. I was just digging into tight end stats on Kmet and Tonyan. Tonyan in 2022 in Green Bay was not very good, but it was his first year back from a knee injury, and he basically couldn't do anything but catch like dump offs. But if you go back and look at Tonyan in 2020 before he got hurt, which was kind of his breakout year, he was a legitimate weapon down the field. And so I'm excited to see if he can get back to that. But regardless, I'm just really excited that they have eight guys that are actual like NFL caliber players. And so even if some injuries mount or as you rotate guys in and out, they're always going to have, should have five legitimate players on the field for the skill positions, which will be a very welcome change.
I almost wonder how much of Tanyan's success in 2020, because I'm just thinking about what the Packers offense was, and obviously their scheme similarities, right? And I don't just want to throw it on Aaron Rodgers either, but like, so thinking it through, you had Davante Adams threatening all over the field, and you had Aaron Jones doing a very similar thing where he's threatening all, like maybe not in the deep portion or intermediate of the field, but he's, you know, he's moving all over horizontally where the line of scrimmage is. So I wonder how the Bears, if they're going to try to replicate anything like that, or like, I imagine that they're going to be using DJ Moore in a lot of different alignments to try to get matchups, like, you know, just like they did Devontae, just like everyone in the NFL does now, right? You know, your best receiver is going to play quite a bit in the slot because he's good. You want that matchup. But I wonder what running back can kind of serve as that for the Bears. And maybe that's Roschon Johnson. Personally, I've kind of questioned whether he's going to be up to speed in time because he did run a pretty simple route tree at Texas. Or if Travis Homer is going to have a bigger role than we anticipate.
Yeah, I feel like Travis Homer is kind of the wild card of this whole thing. And I think it really is the case, right? And I think it happens in every sport. It's not just the NFL. It's probably a little less in the NFL because of the time of day that all these teams play. But it's, dare I say, the Mike Trout effect, right? Where nobody truly understands like how good some of these West Coast guys are until you actually just sit down and watch the games, because nobody talks about them on the East Coast, because that's where the focus is truly your Midwest teams and your East Coast teams. Not to say that Travis Homer is going to come out and be some all world back that we've never heard of before, but because of his pass catching ability, you know, something I brought up on previous episodes of Bears on Tap is, you know, I think the Bears saw what the Eagles and the Chiefs did at running back, which was bring in a bunch of different guys with a bunch of different, I'll call it flavors of ice cream, right? They all do a little bit something different. Homer's that special teams ace, pass catching, you know, really good in the pass blocking game as well back. And then you've got, you know, the big downhill in Foreman. You've got the speed in a guy like Herbert. And then, you know, Roschon's kind of a little bit of a mix of really some of the things that Homer does and some of the things that Foreman does. And maybe we do see a lot more Travis Homer, I think, than people are imagining, because of that ability to be a real threat in that, you know, 5, 6, 7 yards within the line of scrimmage, even if it is just, you know, he's running through the line and he's giving the linebacker a move and he's breaking out on a just a simple out route, maybe that does change how defenses defend the Bears. And then all of a sudden, a guy like Robert Tonyan does become that much more of a weapon, especially, you know, in the medium to deep parts of the field.
And so one of the things I said when they drafted Roschon Johnson, when I was putting my scouting report together on him, is that if the Bears can stay ahead of the sticks, especially going into second down, it's going to be really dangerous with the play action off of Roschon Johnson being such a physical runner. Mm. And that could be where you really see the tight end shine when they're, you know, coming off the line of scrimmage, hauling towards the linebacker like they're about to plow through him, and instead just running by him. Like, we saw Cole Kmet get like a big touchdown last year on that exact kind of thing. But they need to stay ahead of the sticks to do it. You know, I mean, no one's worried about Roschon Johnson on 2nd and 8. They're worried about him on 2nd and 3, 2nd and 2. Now, let's move on to the next one. So, again, similar thought process here. What are the position groups that you think need more help and that you wish that, you know, the Bears could find a way to add more? And I know you already mentioned some O-line on that. You can talk about it again, or if you have another group that in mind.
Well, I was saving this one for this question because it's such an obvious answer. I think we all know, like, it's the defensive line, right? That is clearly the weak link of the team. And yeah, I see Jeremy's comment there, especially defensive end relatively, but even defensive tackle has, you know, the two rookies, but there's not really like a really strong player there. They've got like, okay, they've got four guys who can maybe play, but yeah, and defensive ends hurting more than that probably. Yeah, I think everybody knows that. And I'm sure they're, you know, Poles has said they're looking to add at defensive end still. I'm sure they will at some point, probably closer to training camp. Cause again, the guys who aren't signed yet don't want to sign and then do extra work for free for a couple weeks here before their, you know, summer break prior to camp. But realistically, this is probably like they've got 2 first round picks next year. I won't be shocked if they're both on the defensive line at this point with 1 defensive end and 1 defensive tackle. I will say, though, you know, you can't fix everything in one offseason, even though they did have a lot of resources. And if you're going to leave a weak link on the roster, I'm really glad that they chose the defensive side of the ball over the offensive side, because, well, one, offense is just more important in football. But 2, especially with Justin Fields and needing to evaluate his development and make the decision on him by the end of this year, don't have any glaring holes around him on offense, and they don't. So I'm okay with glaring holes on defense for this year when they're not contenders anyway. That will get fixed in time.
And going back to a further point that you brought up much earlier in the show, Jonathan, of just this team feeling like it's kind of that 500 ball club. I think that's largely why, right? Is because I have a hunch we're going to see games where the final score is 42-35 and the Bears put up 35 points. Like, that just feels like the nature of the beast. And we kind of saw that at points last year. Obviously, they were being outscored at a much higher clip in a lot of those instances, but I think back to that, you know, that Detroit game at Soldier Field. I think back to the Miami game. Close ball games, but again, the defense was no use in trying to help Justin Fields keep that game close. And so in agreement with you, right? Like, if you're going to neglect anywhere, let it be the D-line. Especially, I think, the D-line, right? Because, sure, you're not going to probably get much of a pass rush, but you went out and got linebackers that they've clearly identified fit what they want to do. And they did the same thing in the secondary, right? You're pretty much doubling down on a lot of the guys that you already had there, but then adding a guy like Tyreek Stevenson to the mix through the draft and getting those guys in place. So that way, like you said, if Justin takes that step forward that everybody wants him to, he's the surefire quarterback of the future. Oh, look at this. We have 2 first-round picks. And then you can just go absolutely crazy early in the draft next year and really build up that capital at your weakest position on the football field.
Yeah, it's a man, the defensive line, like, and you threw me there for a second, Jonathan. I thought you were going to say, I'm glad they did the defensive line, not the defense. I was like, I don't know about that. Like, I don't know if they're gonna stop anybody. I think people are going to be able to run all over them. But I'm really interested to see how they rotate this group of defensive linemen, because like, as I say that, you know, I say everyone's gonna be able to run all over them. If Andrew Billings and Jervon Dexter are in there, they're gonna be able to stop the run. Like, you might not get much of a pass rush, but those two will be able to stuff up the middle. Now, stopping the run on the edges might still be a question, but at least up the middle, you know, you're sound when those two are out there. Outside of that, there's not much I trust with this defensive line group right now, but I like the upside picks in the second and third round that they took, because I think, you know, if you know you're very deficient and you're going to be deficient, I like just going after upside and guys who might have been misused or used differently that, you know, you almost have to kind of look a little closer at. Like, I mean, I had to watch a lot of Zach Pickens before I could, like, be convinced, before I was convinced that there's something more there. But once I was, it was like I was convinced that there's potential there. Now, it goes so against everything I like, inside want to say, go, like, neglecting the defensive line is a good idea, just because I, at my heart, I'm like, that's, you know, what I came up around in football was defensive line, offensive line. That's how you build a team. It's something that I'm like constantly battling with, but I do wonder how much this coaching staff is kind of the mindset, or Eberflus's defense is of the mindset that like our cover guys are going to be faster and smarter than you. And the pass rush, yeah, it matters, but it's not our main priority. I mean, I feel like that his first year in Indy before they got Buckner, and I felt like they still put together a good defense, and their defensive line probably was somewhat similar to what we're seeing here. I don't know if it was as, you know, talent deficient, but I think these defensive coaches kind of have this idea in mind that their coverage guys, like I said, faster than you, smarter than you, they're going to be in the right place at the right time and make plays.
Yeah, absolutely. I was careful to say defense and not defensive line specifically, because yeah, in a vacuum, like, I'd much rather sign two really good defensive linemen in free agency and let linebacker go a little bit. But really good defensive linemen don't hit free agency the same way that linebackers do. So I get why they did what they did in that regard. And yeah, I agree with you. I don't think the defense is going to be terrible this year. I think, you know, teams with really good quarterbacks will probably be able to slice them apart because the pass rush won't be great. But their defense was surprisingly not terrible last year for 7 weeks before they traded Quinn and Roquan away. And I think has more talent now than even before having those two. And so I think, like you said, it's they're trusting a, you know, defensive head coach and their coaching staff to be able to kind of scheme competency out of the unit, even if they don't have the talent to be really good yet.
It's almost fun. Like, what was I listening to? I think it was Rasheed Davis was on a CHGO podcast yesterday, and I heard him saying, like, yeah, the defense wasn't complicated, but they were just fast and smart. Like, they were just faster than everybody and knew exactly what they were doing. And I obviously, you can draw the parallels from Eberflus's defense to Lovey's and the same kind of conceptual ideas. But I mean, I really feel like that's what he's trying to do here, is just fast, smart, simple, go let your athletes win. Now, it's another thing that I bump up against conceptually, because the more I think about it, the more I sit on it, I'm just like, these defenses don't stop good quarterbacks. You know, it's like it's something that keeps tearing at me a little. But if you have enough talent on them, they can. We saw it in those Lovey Bears. But it's just how much talent is the breaking point to get through that. You know, it's like we see the Bills. Bills defense is really good in the regular season, but when push comes to shove and they're going up against Pat Mahomes or Joe Burrow in the playoffs, they're just not the same.
Yeah, that's fair. I will say the one thing I think I can trust about the defensive line this year is it's going to give us a lot of heartburn. And with that in mind, I do have a follow-up question for you, Jonathan, before we get to the final question on our list. Is there a name when it comes to some of these veterans that are still out there in free agency that you are just sitting there looking at and you go, he's going to be a bear? Like, you can just feel it. Is there a name that is glaring to you right now, or is it kind of really just a slew of guys that you're like, ah, this guy could, but you're not entirely sure?
Yeah, I don't think I have anybody who I'm like super certain on. I honestly, I'm a college professor and my semester wrapped up about a month ago, but then I taught like a full semester course condensed into 3 weeks for May. So I am not even fully up to speed on who has and hasn't been signed since the draft, to be perfectly honest with you. I think Yannick Ngakoue, I probably butchered that name, is still out there.
Ngakoue,
Yeah. I think he'd be a great fit just because he's like a pass rush mercenary. That's, he does the one thing, but he does it well. And that's the one thing they need. I don't think I saw something this week, but like he wants to sign with a contender. I don't think the Bears would really want him much anyway, because I think they are still prioritizing like the culture and wanting guys who fit more what they're looking for, which isn't necessarily him. But in terms of looking at like, this is the hole on the roster, this is the player who does it the best out of the options left, I think that would be a great fit. But I don't really think it's super likely to happen.
Now, I do wonder for a player like that. I mean, contenders haven't been that interested in him historically. So I do wonder what the point is where he's like, I'll just take the money instead and go to a team who I think is probably on the rise and that I could be a difference maker on. Especially if they tell him, you know, you don't have to play rundowns, you're just a pass rusher. I think that's what he really wants. I think that's all he really cares about. Go get 10 sacks and re-up it again next year.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely a good point, too. I think too, with Ngakoue, right, it's if he is coming in and it is a pass rush, like that to me feels like the perfect, like we are just bringing him in on a one-year deal. We have the money to pay you for the one-year cap hit. Come on in, like you said, Q, rack up 9.5, 10 sacks, playing, you know, a third of the snaps of every game, and sayonara. We appreciate your services to the Chicago Bears in 2023. We wish you the best. We're probably going to draft your replacement, like a more complete defensive end that can come in and do a little bit of everything. So I certainly think that that is definitely a name. I appreciate that you said it. It doesn't feel like a cultural fit, because I think everybody and their brother just instinctually as a Bears fan is like, yeah, that's the guy they're going to sign. But I think that's something that's definitely being taken into consideration in the front office from this group, especially, right, where they are so big on let's establish culture and let's have a healthy locker room. You know, a guy like that who has maybe a little bit of a history of not being the best locker room presence is a guy that they're at least going to do their homework on before just being like, oh, yeah, you're still there. Yeah, here's a contract. Sign it. We'll see you in training camp. Final question, Jonathan, on our list for you is a season prediction. And feel free to go as broad, as deep as you want with this record, maybe a hot take or two, because those are always fun. What do you got for us in terms of season prediction for the Bears in 2023?
Yeah, this is honestly, I think they're probably one of the hardest teams to predict just because there's so few certainties and so many unknowns. You think of like key players like DJ Moore, Chase Claypool, even Robert Tonyan, maybe less key there, but like those guys all had, for their standards, really down seasons last year. Are they going to bounce back to their previous, what they've shown, or are they going to stay, like, was that a sign of things to come? You know, they have, like we talked about earlier with the offensive line, a couple guys with some long injury histories, not really sure what you're going to get out of them with like Cody Whitehair, Tevin Jenkins, even Lucas Patrick. A lot of young guys who you're hoping take steps forward, but may or may not. So like, I think there's a, like if everything hits right, they could actually be pretty good. But if more of those hopeful things turn to the negative side, I think like I would not be shocked by anywhere between like 7 and 10 wins. And then of course there's the elephant in the room of Justin Fields. He has an actual NFL caliber offense around him for the first time in his career and is in year two of the offense. Is he going to make that leap? Because all of a sudden, if he does, the Bears have the second best quarterback in the NFC, which is very quarterback deficient right now. And that can cover up a lot of other talent deficiencies you might have. So
he's never experienced that as a Bears fan. So like, yeah, I mean, I think it's, I always think it's an urban myth of like, that they don't actually do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream, right? All of a sudden you've got this young stud quarterback, and then this is a 10, maybe 11 win team and could make some noise in the playoffs. Again, still like not winning a Super Bowl, but could be a really dangerous team if Fields makes that leap. I'll lean on the cautious optimism, but not fully on board and say 9-8. We'll at least get above 500 with them. And, you know, that's like fringe playoff team, I think would be pretty good progress from the worst record in the league for a 1 year turnaround.
I just want to point out that 9-8, it very likely gives Justin Fields a shot at the MVP. Not MVP.
The MVP. Would be the second Bears quarterback to do so.
Yeah, that could happen.
It could.
I mean, considering it tends to go to the meme quarterback, I hope it doesn't happen, but.
True. It is 100%.
But I mean, yeah, I think that's very reasonable. I mean, I think in our season on the schedule release show that we did, I think I had them at eight wins. So eight, it's so hard to like, because you're talking about 1-2 games that completely swing a prediction from 10 wins to eight, or, you know, from 6 to 8. And those feel like bigger differences than they really are.
Yeah. I mean, they're probably going to have like 10 games that are within a score. Yeah. On average, you'd expect them to win about 5 of them. But if you win 7, all of a sudden you look really good. And if you only win 3, all of a sudden you don't look so good. And some of those come down to like one play.
Before you know it, you're the 2022 Vikings.
Yeah. Yeah. We're 12-5 despite being actually bad. What do you know?
Yeah, that was such a weird team last year. I don't even know what to think about when it comes to them. But Jonathan, we do appreciate you coming on so very much. Any final thoughts for us, as well as where everybody can find you in case they don't know where to find you now?
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. This was a blast. And yeah, you can find me. I write articles for Da Bears blog and on Twitter at Jonathan_Wood1.
Can you tell everyone a little bit about your Fields in Focus series? That is outstanding work.
Thank you. So for 2 years in a row now, I've done a series I call Fields in Focus, which has been like 7 to 8 articles, just really zooming in on Fields and trying to study his performance and see what we can learn from it through a bunch of different angles, like where he's throwing the ball, how he's doing versus man and zone, like how he's doing in short passes versus quick or long ones, like play action, just all the different lenses, under pressure, all of that kind of stuff. If you can find me on Twitter, I've got a thread with links to all of those from this year as my pinned tweet. So you can check those out. I always have fun researching those, learn a lot, and I'm always happy to share that with everybody else.
I think it's safe to say that we are very excited to follow that series now in 2023, especially with some of the whispers and rumblings that have been coming out of OTAs about one Justin Fields. So I know we're looking forward to keeping up with that. And for those that haven't seen it already, as Jonathan said, check it out on his Twitter pinned tweet. Easy to find. You have no excuse. There's no excuse now. You can find it very, very easily and check out your great work. Jonathan, thank you again so much for joining us. Q, thanks again for putting this together for us. This was the second part of our series, of our little off-season experiment that we're doing here at Bears on Tap, to see where everybody really in Bears fandom is kind of lying with this team going into 2023. Gentlemen, without further ado, want to remind everybody, Bears on Tap, 1 of 2 official Bears podcasts of the On Tap Sports Network. Check out our friends over at Bears Nation Pod as well. They just recorded a new episode that just dropped today. This will be dropping from us probably later this evening in podcast form. So you can make sure to check that out there. We are at Bears on Tap on Twitter. At ButtGetStats, one of the greatest accounts on Twitter. If you're not following them already, I don't know what you're doing. Jonathan, as you mentioned, Jonathan_Wood1. We are following each other now as well. And then I'm at Loose on Tap. If you want to follow me, cool. If you don't, I totally understand. But nonetheless, guys, this was a blast. We appreciate your time, Jonathan. And as always, bear down.
Bear down.
Bear down.